I would say arts criticism is on its deathbed in Australia.
It definitely feels like people in the arts communities' backs are against the wall a little bit.
The reviewing scene's an endangered species.
The word crisis is on everyone's lips. It wasn't all that long ago that newspapers had separate sections for the arts and for entertainment news. Then they started to combine them, and arts criticism had to compete with celebrity gossip for space. Well, since then, the space for arts criticism has shrunk even more, and across all traditional media. Tyson Ray is a music and comedy critic.
I mean, just look around you right now. Like, you know, after 25 years, last month, Bernard Zuhl, like, leaving the Sydney Morning Herald. There's one page of arts in The Age, you know, on a daily basis when, you know, a couple of years ago it was four. It seems like the embers of the once vibrant arts criticism flame that, you know, sort of warmed Australia, they're now only being fanned by poorly paid freelancers who must find other work to sustain themselves, or volunteers, and people just burn out and it's just not sustainable. I don't really see there being much more of a future for nuanced criticism in Australia, to be perfectly honest.
Fairfax has announced another shake-up of its media business. The staff at The Age in Melbourne and the Sydney Morning Herald are again facing redundancies.
It's another blow to Fairfax journalists after hundreds of job losses in recent years.
And there are a lot of jobs that are currently within the arts and entertainment broadly on a national level across Melbourne and Sydney.
Fairfax has issued a statement that says, "The Sydney Morning Herald and The Age will maintain a strong commitment to the arts."
It's possible that perhaps up to 10 sections writers across both cities won't have a job.
Once upon a time, the art column was more than 3,000 words a week. It was like an essay every week.
For 30 years, John McDonald has been writing arts and film criticism, much of it for the Fairfax Press.
And the last few 6 years or so, it's been more like 1,500 words for the art column. And then I started to write a film column that was about 1,600 words. So I was doing about 3,000 to 3,500 for the newspapers every week on lots of different topics. But what's happened within the last 12 months is that the film column has shrunk by half and my pay by half, and the art column has shrunk by a third and my income by a third. And that, I'm told, has nothing to do with the quality of my work. It's merely to do with the cold, hard economic facts of trying to make a profit running a newspaper today.
The feeling is that it's a very embattled culture.
Playwright and theatre critic Alison Croghan.
You know, the huge sackings that happened last year in Fairfax particularly showed a crisis, but that's been going on for a long time now, since the 80s, since well before digital culture. I mean, it's very commonplace to say, well, the rise of the internet has led to, you know, a whole lot of things happening in print newspapers. But from when I started reviewing, for The Bulletin in the late 80s, and during the time that I was reviewing for The Bulletin, theatre reviews, which is what I wrote, I was a Melbourne theatre critic, went from 800 words to 500 words to 400 words. And that was happening through the 90s. So already back then, the space available for cultural discussion in all the mainstream outlets was already under pressure.
All media publications have to work out how to survive financially. Some have chosen a solution that has a direct impact on the arts criticism that they publish. This is especially true, it seems, in the music press. Tyson Ray.
The amount of times that I've seen or heard of or myself being told that we can't publish this because it has the possibility to negatively affect us financially. That's the landscape we live in these days.
So they're relying on advertising from the people, from the record companies and so on, and they can't risk alienating them.
Absolutely. And when you look at, say, you know, the avalanche of music publications that there are out there, predominantly online, and how little advertising money there is from festivals and record labels these days. It's, you know, it's the skin of your teeth.
As with publications, so with critics.
I think being a critic is a little bit like being a politician. If you don't pay politicians, then they'll be looking for their income from vested interests. If you don't pay critics, then they'll be looking for their income from dealers and from anybody else who has, you know, some money to spend in order to get a favourable comment. I think in an ideal world, critics would be decently paid so they could have that sense of objectivity. But the phrase conflict of interests is not a phrase that appears in many people's vocabulary in this industry.
The sacking of journalists, shrinking word counts, pressure on critics to write favourable reviews when advertising money is at stake. The word crisis was on the lips of nearly everyone I spoke with for this series. I say nearly. That's because publisher and academic Sandra Phillips, who is a Waka Waka and Gurang Gurang woman, explains that things look a little different from where she stands. If a house is burning down, she asked me, does it matter if you were never in the house in the first place?
Shrinking arts pages are a tear in the fabric. In terms of their particular impact on Indigenous artists, writers, creators, First Nations peoples, I'm not entirely sure that we're as affected as the middle-class white commentariat and the middle-class white creator communities.
There have been significant changes in funding, particularly federally, that have impacted arts organisations and individual artists in a negative way.
Saturday Paper literary editor Michael Nolan.
Shedding journalists at an alarming rate. As is usual, arts departments will be one of the earlier areas, shall we say, to be cut, arts pages. However, I would say also that I have full confidence in the Australian arts community in fighting back, staying relevant, producing great work, and talking about it. And there's certainly, in terms of criticism and just general debate, there's a lot of forums that will be lively and will continue. If we talk about the literary community, it's interesting to say how vibrant it actually is. We have so many small publishers, small to medium publishers producing great work around the country despite having such a small population. We're big readers. We have literary festivals all across the country, you know, the major ones in all the capital cities, of course, but all sorts of small towns having literary and readers festivals. It's tragic that we're losing arts criticism in the national publications and broadcast television and on radio. I'm old school enough to prefer that because I think some sort of gatekeepered, edited arts review section is very important to the culture of the nation. So, you know, I'd like to see that reversed somehow. But on the individual and on the ground level, I think things will remain strong.
As Michael Nolan suggests, there is definitely some good news here as well. When other publications cut their coverage of the arts, the monthly magazine announced it would do the opposite and increase its coverage. There are also a number of new Australian websites and other platforms featuring arts criticism, including the award-winning site Junkie and The Lifted Brow. A sense of new possibilities is also behind theatre critic Alison Crogan's new project, an online platform called witnessperformance.com, which he is working on with theatre colleague Robert Reed.
We would like to make actually a very modest living by running this website, and we're going to basically be crowdfunding it. But it's going to have an educational component, and what it's going to be is a number of things, but the focus is going to be on community, engaging that community that we know is out there, especially from the days of Theatre Notes. We know that community's out there. We know it's a passionate community, and it will have a historical component. There will be videos and resources about Australian theatre history, which is mainly not being taught in tertiary institutions anymore. And there'll be long-form essays, there'll be stuff about cultural issues, industrial issues, and obviously reviews of contemporary performance. And it's about sort of wanting to kind of redefine the parameters of criticism a bit that can welcome people who are not necessarily literate in the art form will be posting work that stimulates discussion. So it'll be a curated site, basically.
More good news came from the organisers of the Walkley Awards for Journalism. The Walkleys have long had an award for arts writing, but beginning in 2017, there's been a Walkley's Pascal Award for arts criticism as well. All the critics I spoke to for this series were united by one thing, a passion for the arts and a conviction that informed arts criticism is important for a healthy, vital culture. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better. Our first episode began with an anecdote by playwright, novelist, and literary critic Louis Naura. I think we'll give him the last word too.
I like reviewing because it means I can lie in bed and read. So I like doing that because I think it's very important to feel comfortable. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff better than your new stuff. I like your old stuff.